The Inside Aperture podcast introduces you to the experts who use Apple's professional image management application to organize, edit, and output their pictures. Each show features tips and techniques that will help you improve the quality of your photography and bring efficiency to your workflow.
Hi, I'm Derek Story with O'Reilly Media. I'm with Jennifer Sauer today. She's a photographer, and she has just authored a new book, Jennifer.
The Way to Tea, Your Adventure Guide to San Francisco Tea Culture.
And we're talking with Jennifer today for a couple reasons. One, because this is an absolutely beautiful book, and as a photographer, she has a lot of things going for her, so she has a lot of knowledge. But the other thing is she has a fabulous workflow that she has put together that includes Aperture and some other tools. And Jennifer, I think, why don't you start out by describing how you took on this project, The Way to Tea, and then let's get into the workflow a little bit, because I think I was fascinated when you told me about your workflow, and I think so were our listeners. But to start out, tell us about the project. How did you get into tea?
I had an assignment to shoot whatever I wanted and just to show up with 2 gigs of images for a client. And I ended up just unwittingly finding myself in a tea shop in Chinatown in San Francisco. And this Chinese man beckoned me into the tea store to try a cup of tea. And when I walked in, a whole wall was just covered with these huge glass jars filled with all these different colors and shapes and textures of teas. And I thought, oh my gosh, I had no idea this was tea. This is just amazing. And then I sat down to have tea, and there was a long tea bar with people of all different ages and colors and having tea, and they were talking about art and poetry and literature and tea and food and medicine, and it was absolutely fascinating. The whole thing altogether was really fascinating. And so my first love of tea was really visual, and as time went on and I researched tea in more depth, I realized that it was a real phenomenon, that tea culture is really a phenomenon, and tea is not just a beverage, but really just something extraordinary. So within a couple of months of researching it, I ended up committing myself to doing a book on San Francisco tea culture, which is kind of a microcosm of all the different tea traditions in the world, British, Japanese, Chinese, and you know, several others thrown in. So that's pretty much how I got started on the book.
So you can go to, you know, one area, the San Francisco area, and really be exposed to a lot of different facets about tea then.
Well, what's great about the Bay Area is that it is kind of compact, and you can actually experience a Japanese tea ceremony up on near the Muir Beach area at Green Gulch in the morning, and you can have afternoon tea at the Ritz-Carlton in the afternoon, and you can have a Chinese Gong Fu tea ceremony a little after that in Chinatown, and then you can go to a tea nightclub over on Masonic Street and have green tea in your mixed drink. So it's really eclectic, really fun, and all these different expressions of tea are really fascinating.
Very nice for a photographer. Now, you know, eclectic applies to you in a lot of ways, and it applies to your workflow also. And you have had your eye on Aperture pretty much from the beginning and actually incorporated it into your workflow to produce this book. And again, I cannot emphasize how beautiful this book is. It's absolutely gorgeous. You've done a great job both at capture and in post. So can you just give us an overview to start with once you wanted to get the pictures off the card and get them into the computer and kind of take it from there? Just give us a snapshot of your workflow, and then we'll drill down into some of the specifics.
Well, actually, to start with, I start with Photo Mechanic, and for the main reason that Aperture is such a beautiful program, a beautiful interface, that I fall in love with my pictures and I can't cut them out, and makes it very difficult to edit. So I actually do my first edit in Photo Mechanic, and I also rename the images in Photo Mechanic because I find that to be a very, very fast way to do it. Then I take my selects and I bring them into Aperture, and from that point I use the straightening tool, I use the cropping tool. I do a very little bit of exposure control. I'm pretty careful about exposure when I'm actually shooting, so luckily I don't have to do a lot of that, but I work with exposure. I also use the temperature control to work with the temperature of some of the images. Then I do, for this book anyway, I did the TIFF 16-bit output from raw images, And then from there, I take them into Photoshop. And in Photoshop, I do a little bit more image tweaking. I use the cloning tool to get rid of some of the dust spots, some of the hairs, all of that. I usually use levels. I had an excellent teacher, Mark Rutherford of Lux Studios, and he taught me how to prepare images for press. So I use levels, and then I also sometimes use the curves tool, just very, very slightly. And then from there, I...
Now, are you doing... Are you working right on the image, or are you doing these as adjustment layers in Photoshop?
I make a first adjustment layer, and mm-hmm. then I do all of it in layers. I don't do it directly on the image. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the image needs very little work, but I still work in layers. I still start with that first adjustment layer. And then what I generally do is I output it to CMYK. And then after that, I do the sharpening, whatever sharpening is required. And Mark taught me to do a little bit more sharpening than you think is necessary from what you see on your screen.
Interesting.
And I think he was right on the money with that. In fact, I think he was right on the money with everything he taught me. He did a great job at teaching me, and I'm really happy with the way the images turned out. So
then you also follow the adages of doing sharpening as your very last step.
I do.
In the process, yeah.
As the very last step. And I also... Before the final, I actually save them as PSD files first, mm-hmm. and then the final, I always save a copy of the PSD images. So if you ever want to go back in,
yes.
and something minor is wrong, you don't have to start from scratch. You've got all the tools that you want, to work with. And I think that was critical because I did have to go back a couple of times, as did Mark. Mark helped me from Hong Kong. I had a couple images I had trouble with on press. Mm-hmm. I called Mark at 3:00 in the morning, Hong Kong time, and he could go right into the file. He had the whole PSD file that I had given him. He could tweak it very, very slightly and FTP'd it back to me. So it worked out just fine.
Very nice. Very nice. So this is really a fascinating workflow. But, you know, the one thing that really jumps out at me is that sounds like you use aperture differently than a lot of photographers do. Generally speaking, when I talk to photographers who use aperture, you know, it's sort of their primary container. Where you actually have, you know, a few specific roles for it within your workflow. So, you know, the question that just jumps out at me is, what are the strengths of aperture that, you know, made you bring this into your workflow? Why aperture?
Well, you know, I hesitated to use aperture because I was warned that I shouldn't use aperture for my conversions, especially on a big project where there was a lot at risk. And but I experimented with it anyway. I was using Capture One Pro before for all my conversions, and so I tested aperture against Capture One. I found that there was very little difference, and the difference that was there was so minor that it was negligible. So from that standpoint, I thought, wow, well, you know, the aperture conversions are so incredibly fast, so incredibly easy, and it's also a wonderful way to kind of, you know, when you have all your files, you know, in one place, and you can say, okay, I'm going to output this low res for the publisher. I'm going to output this one high res for my, you know, for the final use for the book. I want to use a web gallery to show this other designer friend what I'm working on, and, you know, someone who might help me choose some of the images that I want to use. You have like all these different tools within aperture, for one. For two, the conversions really, really are so fast, and it is so user-friendly. It's so easy. And they're beautiful conversions. And despite all warnings, I have to say that any professional person who's looked at my book has asked me who did the printing of the book. They want to know who the printer was because they can't believe. They're like, wow, who pulled this out of any image? And I really think it has a lot more to do with the combination of the conversions as well as the, you know, what Mark Rutherford taught me in terms of how to prepare an image for press. And I coddled and nursed my babies to fruition, and I really loved every image, and so I took good care of them. But so they turned out beautifully on press, and I really.
So you're shooting with a Canon 5D, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So all the images. So and then you're using aperture for the raw conversion part of your workflow there.
Right.
So you're taking the raw files from a Canon 5D, converting them in aperture, and then, of course, you know, the rest of the workflow, as you talked about here, do a few adjustments there and then go into Photoshop and so forth. Do you do anything specific at Capture any tricks, you know, that fits your workflow in post-production, or are you just trying to get the best image you can? Do you do anything like custom white balance, or, you know, tell me a little bit about what you're doing on the capture side.
You know, I'm not a super technical photographer, at least I don't consider myself to be, which is one of the reasons I use Aputure, because I want to minimize the time that I have to spend doing technical work. Mm-hmm. In terms of the capture, I don't, as far as I know, I'm not doing anything extraordinary or exceptional or special. I mean, I look at the image, I try to gauge, you know, you can kind of tell if the image is a little warm or a little cool. Mm-hmm. You know, I tried to do more of that, honestly, in Photoshop than I did in mm-hmm. Aputure, but I did kind of the global changes in Aputure before I brought it into Photoshop. I also turned the sharpening off in mm-hmm. Aputure and handled all of that at the end.
So you're just, and you're okay with that, you know, because you know that the image is going to be the sharpness that you want when it's all said and done. So you're okay with working on it
right.
On screen without maybe seeing some of that sharpening earlier in the process.
Right.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, for other uses, I might handle the workflow differently. I mean, mm-hmm. I might rely more completely on Aputure.
Oh, sure, because you're ending up with CMYKs here that go to press. So
right.
Yeah, that is, I mean, in most of our everyday workflows, that is an unusual output.
You know, it is.
Yeah. This is really cool. I'm really just fascinated by this. When you're processing in Aputure, then, are you using any of the white balance tools in there, or are you saving most of that for Photoshop?
I don't use too many of the white balance tools. Mm-hmm. The only tool that I really use is the temperature. And I somehow like the temperature tool. I go, oh, well, this is just a little warm, or it's a little cool.
It's a nice slider, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a nice slider. So yeah. I just, you know, I like Aputure particularly because it's very intuitive. Like, I'm in love with the straightening tool. Mm-hmm. I know it sounds ridiculous, but mm-hmm. you have this nice screen with the little graph, mm-hmm. all the lines. You can do it very intuitively, and it's like you're toggling it back and forth. It's just, I'm in love with that tool because I'm a slightly crooked photographer. For some reason, all my pictures are slightly not quite straight. So that, and, you know, I found all the tools in Aputure to be very, very intuitive. And also, it's a beautiful interface. It really is.
It absolutely is, yeah. Well, you know, one of the things, one of the themes that I was thinking about when you were talking earlier is that obviously you're a talented photographer in terms of eye and composition and those things. I mean, you seem to draw good shots out of the situations that you're in. But one of the things I like about what you're saying is that, you know, we have good tools these days. We have good cameras, right? The 5D, for example, is an excellent capture device. And then we have good software. And it sort of feels like, as you're telling me your story, that, well, you know, the tools sort of, you know, get out of your way and just allow you to think about the picture and not think about every little technical nuance all the way through the process.
Yeah, to some degree that's true. I mean, I think in Aputure that's true. At the same time, once you get into the minutiae of a picture, I'm probably as anal as the next person. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really, you know, yeah. I definitely will spend a lot of time on one or two images, but the Aputure portion of it is not time consuming, which is what is so special about the program and which is why I use it. Mm-hmm. And I do think that their conversions are outstanding. I think they definitely outshine Photoshop conversions for mm-hmm. my taste, for mm-hmm. the way that I like to see images. And I think they're comparable to Capture One Pro, and they're much faster than Capture One Pro. So
yeah, and, you know, that's an interesting thing. When there was all the yak about Aputure's conversions early on, and I think this was more back at Aputure 1.0, not with the later versions now so much. But one of the things I thought was interesting about those conversations was, like, there was a right way to convert a RAW file. And, you know, my opinion has always been is that, you know, a conversion is exactly that. There's the Adobe Camera Raw way, there's the Capture One way, there's the Aputure way, and each of these applications are, you know, applying sort of, you know, their secret sauce to this literally raw file, and each are kind of converting it, you know, the way that it does. And it's not like one conversion is right or wrong. I think a lot of times it comes down to is which conversion do you as a photographer like, you know, what appeals to your eye. Mm-hmm. And I never really like that, you know, Aputure converts RAW files wrong. It just seemed like a funny thing to say. And so it's really interesting to, you know, to hear your take on it. And to your eyes, it's a beautiful conversion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It works well for me. And, you know, as you said, different tools work well for different people. And it's maybe a personality thing. But to me, it's the whole program. It's not just that it does beautiful conversions and very fast conversions, but it's also the way that you work with the images. Also, you know, rating the images. Once I got a number of images in there, I could look at them. I could use the loop tool. You can kind of call the loop tool up with a click of a button, and then it's gone with the click of a button. You can, you know, look carefully at what's sharp, what's not sharp, and then you give it as many stars as you want. And it's a very, very fast editing tool. And it, you know, so like I said, my first edit I do in Photo Mechanic, but you know, that's a rough cut.
Yeah,
that's definitely my tool for the rough cut. But the final edit, I definitely do an Aperture, where I'm looking more carefully at the images and also, you know, rating them and sorting them. And that, or you know, with versions, using versions, and you say, well, you know, I've got six images to choose from here, and I love them all. And then you can kind of put the image you like best as a centerpiece, and then you can, you know, rethink it and look at it later against other images you might use on the light table, for example. So it's a really nice way to work.
So how do you keep track of all of your images? Because obviously, I don't even have a guess at to how many shots you took for this project, but I'm guessing it was a lot.
It was a lot. I mean, it was in the thousands, but that's probably another way in which I work with Aperture. I'm a little bit of a control freak, like a lot of photographers are, and I think this has changed with the Aperture program, but at the time that I started using it, you had to use the Aperture library, and I didn't feel that comfortable with it, so what I did, I have my own library on my hard drive, and I would pull images into Aperture that were basically my selects. And that could be a pretty broad range of images. I might be looking at, 20, 25, 30 images that I'll narrow down to one or maybe two. So I would create albums and little files in Aperture while maintaining the bulk of my library on a hard drive, but then my selects would all be in Aperture for that project. So I see Aperture as being a project-related. I use it functionally as a project-related tool.
Right. And so you actually didn't create a project within Aperture that for instance, would have the images from this book in there. And then are those reference files, or do you keep, or is that part of it, a managed library then?
It's not really a managed library. What I end up doing is I output all the TIFFs that I want, or PSDs and then TIFFs. I keep, I keep my finals on a separate hard drive, not within the Aperture library, because I've worked with them in Photoshop at that point. So I keep them on my regular hard drive. But and then honestly, with this project, with the Way to Tea, it's really awful, but I did accidentally erase it off of Aperture, but I had everything I needed, and I knew there was a risk of doing that because I was doing something I shouldn't do, and I knew that I was doing that. So, and I actually wanted more of my hard drive space that the Aperture library was on. So, you can use it on a project by project basis, bring it in. When you're done with the project, you can erase that project. When you have, you have your high res, your low res, you have all the things you need, but then you can call those images back in just as easily. It's absolutely nothing to call in a folder on Aperture, so you can call those same images in that have already been worked on and put them up. I've done that before, actually, and used them to put up a web gallery, for example, or use it in some other way.
I mean, that really is a different use of the library aspect of it. So you're actually bringing projects in and out of Aperture to do certain tasks.
I am.
That's very, very interesting and very cool, as long as, now my caveat, the other thing that's going to jump out at me, so 3 years later, are you going to be able to, since you're not really in sort of a managed library sort of situation, are you going to be able to find your files like 3 years from now? Like if you want to find a specific shot, let's say, from this book, you have a good cataloging system?
Well, for this particular project, I'm putting the whole project on a little firelight, like an 80 gig firelight, and I'm putting it away carefully, and I've got it in two or three different places to make sure I don't lose it. So, I have to admit, I'm not super technical. If I knew more about how to use the Aperture library properly, I might very well use it. Mm-hmm. I know that you can put the library on different hard drives in different ways. I haven't explored that yet.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that
But this is something that I love about this conversation, though, is that you're not an Aperture expert. You're a photographer who has, you know, done some really nice projects. So in that sense, you're like a real world person. Right? Where I would say, in all honesty, that the Aperture expert is the exception, right? I mean, that's the person that, okay, maybe has a real software bent and likes the technical side of stuff, but maybe isn't shooting as much. Now, there are exceptions to this, like Vinnie Versace is going to be an exception. There's a guy that's a really good photographer and just a total geek on the computer side, too. But generally speaking, it seems like to me that artists fall into a couple categories where they have strengths, and then other areas they just don't care as much about. So what I love about the way that you're using Aperture is that it's not the geek approach, but yet you still find it a useful tool. And I think that's fascinating, actually.
It's a very useful tool, and it's also, you know, like most commercial photographers or most photographers who rely on photography to make a living, there is no end to the things that demand your time. And you don't have a lot of time to waste. I mean, that's how I feel. If I'm not going to get these images out the door in a certain period of time, I don't want to use that software program. I want to understand it. I want to get the images up. I want to get them out. And I want them to look good. They have to be of a quality that I'm comfortable with. So Aperture does all that. So, I mean, how can you argue with it, really?
Exactly.
I mean,
the results speak for themselves.
They do.
My guess is that you can find this book on Amazon.com, which a lot of folks have access to. But if you want a signed book...
If you want a signed book, you can contact me directly at www.waytot.com and click the Buy the Book button, and I'll send you a signed copy.
That's fabulous. Thank you so much for stopping by, Jennifer. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
The Inside Aperture podcast is produced by O'Reilly Media. To learn more about Aperture, be sure to visit digitalmedia.oreilly.com/aperture for articles, tutorials, blogs, and podcasts. This show is produced on a Mac using Soundtrack Pro. See you next time.